And thank you, Karen Anderson. Attention, please, on KPTZ Port Townsend, and we would like to keep your attention right here on the radio as we enter into Brewocracy Now, which is coffee with the city manager, John Morrow. Hi, John.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. I see that we have a guest today.
We do. I'd like to acknowledge and welcome our guest, Cindy Jane. Cindy can introduce herself, but I know her famously for her work with Local 2020 and as chair of the Climate Action Committee. And we're also joined by Janine Boyrig from the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, who just popped on. She might be startled by the fact I'm introducing her as she's still getting getting her web connection. So welcome to Janine and Cindy.
Thanks, John. It is a delight to be here. And hi, Cindy. Great to see you. Thanks for all your great work.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to join you today on KPTZ. Happy, as always, to be talking about climate change.
And it's always great to have company here on Brewocracy Now. I'm going to leave this to you, John. What are we doing today?
Well, here's what I was thinking. You can kind of see we can shoot from the hip here, Tim. But I was really honored to spend a little time with the Marine Science Center last week, talking a bit about climate change and reflecting on some of the work that I used to do and that I look forward to doing a little bit more of here. And it got me thinking, because it was a short session and there were a lot of other things happening that, continuing the conversation till today would be useful because we can talk more deeply about climate change. And in fact, doing so with more than just me would be also very valuable because I'm still somewhat of a newcomer here. And we have quite longstanding efforts that have been put forward, both for mitigating the impacts of emissions and also adapting to climate change. And I don't know too many people more equipped than Cindy Jane to speak to that, and because you've been living it for quite a long time, and I also don't know too many organizations besides Janine and the Science Center. Of course, there are many, but really on literally the front lines with the purchase of a new building right on Water Street, an educational force for our region. So it's an honor to have them here today too. I was hoping also to have Karen Affeld from the North Olympic Development Council, who's also been doing quite a lot of work regionally around climate change and the green economy. Unfortunately, Karen literally is in a meeting about climate change right now, so couldn't join us. So hopefully someday soon. So I would say the first bulk of this conversation, Tim, I know there are a couple of questions that came through an email that are not directly related, but maybe we'll save a few minutes at the end for me to quickly address those questions. But really right now, I'd love to know both from Cindy and from Janine, both maybe starting with Cindy, what's happened to date? How do you set the table for what we've already achieved and what we've already done? And then maybe we can talk about where we're going from here. So Cindy, do you want to just say a few words about that?
Sure, happy to, John. So maybe starting from the beginning, the Climate Action Committee formed in about 2008. And one of the first things actually that what the group that formed that had done previous to that is do an inventory of greenhouse gas emissions across Jefferson County. So we have they had an inventory from based on 2005 data. And then recently the Climate Action Committee decided, it's been a little while, it's time to update that. So using 2018 data, starting in 2019, worked with the organizations throughout the county, the city and county, of course, were very directly involved, but also worked with the other Climate Action Committee organizational members, including Port Townsend Paper Company, the port, the PUD, and the hospital, and Jefferson Transit as well, and gathered up information from them, specifically to the emissions of those organizations, but also more broadly, the emissions across the entire community. And looking at that was quite interesting because we found that transportation, which was high previously, is even higher now at 66% of our total emissions. And that's partly because We're fortunate to have some good reductions, partly because of the change with the PUD taking over electricity, and that reduced the carbon footprint of our electricity quite a bit. And so that made transportation an even bigger piece. And then Port Townsend Paper Company also reduced their emissions. So again, those both resulted in transportation being even higher. And unfortunately, we saw that transportation was really moving in the wrong direction with an increase in vehicle miles traveled, even on a per capita basis. So that kind of gave us a good snapshot of where we are overall with our county inventory. And then we had a group of, there was a group of volunteers involved in both of those previous inventory efforts. And then another group that worked on looking at how can we both, what are our best opportunities to reduce our emissions? So using the data from the inventory and using the same instead of software from this ICLEI organization that provides community-wide inventory software, they had another set focused on modeling opportunities to reduce emissions. So it was great to see that. And again, not surprisingly, we found our top opportunities are all around transportation. Reducing vehicle miles traveled in all forms. There's a variety of strategies we looked at, everything from more transit runs, running transit more frequently, looking at infrastructure. How can we put more bike and ped infrastructure in there? Looking at where our housing is with respect to services, those sorts of things, compact development. And then, of course, electric vehicles was the other huge opportunity we have. Not surprisingly, you know, this has been seen in many other areas. The more we can convert our vehicles over to electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles that are plug-in, and really help us reduce those transportation emissions. The other thing I'll just say quickly, and then I'll stop, but the other thing that has happened, as you referred to in previously in 2015, there is an opportunity to do, we got a grant to that NODC, got a grant for preparing for climate impacts across the North Olympic Peninsula. So that was a great summary of how is climate change going to impact the area and what are the top opportunities to prepare for those impacts. So that's just some of the history behind where we've been.
Thanks, Cindy. I think I was going to go there because I think, you know, especially recently, I feel like the conversation has been not only, you know, stalwart, like trying to drive down emissions and focusing on transportation, but also realizing that, you know, we are in a very unique location. If you want to tell a good news story, well, luckily, you know, we might actually be a bit of a haven when we see, you know, temperatures spiking around the West and fires sparking off. I mean, we're not immune to that by any means, but, you know, it seems as though our community might ride out a lot of the problems far better than others. On the other hand, you know, it's hard not to look at a map of our community and even the county and think there's a lot of shoreline. And so sea level rise, more frequent storm surges, you know, downpours, fire, or if not fire directly, smoke from fires in the region. There's just a range of effects that we're already seeing as a change to our climate. And as a community, I would imagine, you know, all of us feel pretty confident that we need to be preparing for even further impacts there. So I'm grateful that the CAC, NODC, and others have really put forward, I believe it's a climate adaptation dashboard with more information you could find online on the NODC site, and I believe on the local 2020 site as well.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, and you can find that whole report for planning for climate change in the North Olympic Peninsula on that NODC site.
That's right. So, I mean, I don't want to, I mean, there's so much to talk about the work that has gotten to this moment here, but I also get really excited about changes and, you know, pivots. And I feel like Janine, you're for many reasons, well positioned to talk about what that means. Do you have a vision for how the Marine Science Center could play a distinct role in helping to galvanize both support and a clear message and a clear vision for where we need to head to?
I'm just extremely grateful for Cindy and NODC's leadership in this. And I think one of the things that gets in the way of progress is that this is very complex. So climate change equals global warming, equals ocean acidification, equals there's just so many different layers when you're moving CO2. It's not just one thing that's moving. Everything on the planet is moving. Species habitats are moving, shorelines are moving, things are warming up. There's just, everything is changing, and it's changing more rapidly now than ever before. And so it's just, it's, and when we're kind of the biology people, the marine biology folks, and biology can't adapt on the kind, at the rate that we are seeing the changes happen on the planet, particularly with climate change. And so we see it as our responsibility to be a piece of the solution and to lift up the good work of Local 2020 and Cindy and Endo DC, and to provide a concrete example and demonstration of what's possible, and to think about things in terms of not only the built environment and human habitat, but also marine habitat, and how to think about things in a multivariant approach, and to approach things from the kind of complexity, or at least try for the complexity of the challenges that we have ahead. And so by way of example, looking at the building that we just bought, we did a very exhaustive due diligence process. And when you look at the physical nature of the building, you go in and you ramp down. So realistically, we're probably going to have to level that floor out and raise the main floor up by about 4 feet, which means that it's going to require major renovations, and it's going to be very disruptive. And we know that that's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for us. It's going to be a challenge for the tenants, the current tenants of Flagship Landing. But we feel like it is our responsibility to do what we can as a part of the kinds of changes that are going to be needed to save our beautiful little town.
Janine, sorry, Tim, if you want to jump in, it's partly your show here.
No, you please.
I was going to say, I mean, Janine, what you said, I guess I had a little chuckle about the complexity of things, because I think that's well recognized. And I guess part of it is playing to our own strengths as a community. I have this vision of who's listening to this on KPTZ and who a loyal KPTZ listener is. And it's not one archetype, not one type of person. It's a diversity. I'm pretty confident. But one thing that seems to hold a lot of this in common is that people are pretty sophisticated in their thinking. We're an unusual little town for our brain power. And if there's any community that can understand how complexity means all hands on deck, complexity means no simple answers. It means really thinking forward and kind of embracing that complexity. I think it's probably this community. So I don't speak on behalf of everybody listening, of course, but I think we're up for the challenge, understanding what this might look like in our local environment. What we can do that, you know, in some cases, for instance, and I shared this with you in the Marine Science Center, you know, some communities I've visited and been toured around are embracing more water into their community. You know, it's one of those things that instead of fighting it off, that's costly. You know, that's a very expensive engineering solution to only protect yourself from sea level rise. Well, what are the opportunities to live with water and not accept that we have no agency in changing climate change, but to recognize that we are locked in for 30 or 40 years, even if all emissions stop today. So that kind of creativity and that kind of complexity, I think, can play out here. And frankly, I'm eager to dive into more of this, both with you and also members of this community.
Actually, that's a great example, John. When we were in our due diligence looking at the Flagship Landing building and went into the basement. The basement is basically beach, mm-hmm. and it's designed so that the water does inundate through the riprap. And there's actually during king tides, the water comes under the building. So it's actually kind of like our current aquarium on the pier at Fort Worden. There's water under there. Yeah. And that's kind of okay for an aquarium.
Right.
So we're going to be able to put our tanks down into bedrock, and it should be,
yeah,
it should be okay.
Yeah, that's right. I was just on a walk before this conversation with our public works director, Steve King, and we were looking at shoreline, thinking about site development, thinking about things that are both adaptation related, but also mitigation related in terms of how to really activate biking and walking and make some connections. We also happened to walk by a lift station too, that luckily is protected to some degree from sea level rise, but is, you know, public infrastructure that maybe in the next several decades is something we need to rethink. So it's very real for us as organizations that have physical assets in town. And even if you are in uptown, it clearly matters with, you know, barely a degree of separation, even if you're not physically in an inundation zone.
It's so great to hear this conversation, and certainly something the Climate Action Committee has been talking about, of how we really need to all shift, like the Marine Science Center is doing, and like you're talking about, John, to just make sure that really all these key decisions we make going forward, whether it be infrastructure, whether it be plans, regulations, that we think about the climate change impacts of them, you know, and consider the various impacts that, as well as the greenhouse gas impacts, of course, and just kind of keep that front and center as all these decisions are being made.
Speaking of front and center, Tim Quackenbush.
Oh, well, no, you brought up a point that just occurred to me, and that is that we have a deep well of expertise in for the size of city that we have here. And I would imagine that you spend a lot of your time listening. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that a bit of Port Townsend Bay made it through the window into Better Living for Coffee. So these are things that I think have to be at the forefront of our thinking right now. And for people that may not know your background as sustainability in Auckland, New Zealand, do you find that the position you're in now allows you to have a... it's a matter of scale, I'm sure, but a bigger impact when it comes to these issues.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be humble here about how I've only been here not even quite 2 years yet. So my ears are still open, but, you know, and hopefully will always be. But there's very, I mean, I'm still coming to an understanding of the groundwork laid by people like Cindy, you know, over quite a number of years to put us in a position where we've actually made pretty tangible progress in our carbon footprint. You know, we've been leading the way in a lot of ways, and it's a story that's not often told very directly. So I think shining some light on our understanding of our current inventory, of the adaptation dashboard, and you know, just some of the work that's been done is partly what I can do. You know, I'll be honest, like I am on this show hopefully every week, this is something that was a passion of mine for 20 years, you know, and as chief sustainability officer in Auckland, the entire frame that my team and I used was climate change and developing an adaptation, mitigation, and just transition plan, working with industry, working with the 19 Maori tribes in Auckland, working with nonprofits, working with the central government and Jacinda Ardern as prime minister. So, I mean, this is something that it's weird, but it's kind of a happy place for me. But I think I don't want to kind of bumble into it and just take the frameworks and the approaches I used in New Zealand for 7 years and just suddenly apply them to Port Townsend. I would say, though, that, you know, leading in a pandemic is not an excuse, but it's an added challenge. And that, you know, just like this morning and walking around the infrastructure, we are also working on an agreement with the Port Townsend Paper Company literally this week. You know, I mean, so there are big decisions and big ways that climate change shows up in the daily decision making that my team and I either do or go to council to get their policy direction. And I want to at least give some confidence to people who think that I've taken my eye off the ball with climate change, that, you know, you kind of can't pull that away from me as we size up infrastructure or facilities decisions, transportation decisions. It's just how I'm built. It's just, I have to ask those questions of my team. And we don't often pound our chest about that or talk about all the scrutiny around electric vehicles. We're trying to, you know, transition our fleet, all that. I'd rather tell that story once we've actually accomplished what we're intending to do. So I would also say to those who care deeply about climate change and climate action, don't let that steer you away from coming at us with ideas, demanding action, and wanting to move the ball faster, because it needs to be moved.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the, another one of the decisions about purchasing Flagship, John and Cindy and Tim, was about reaching a different and much bigger audience. And so that is actually one of our core, the core reasons that we picked Flagship Landing, is that by being there, we will have a mouthpiece to a much different audience than those people that find their way to a state park. It is going to be people that are straight off the ferry from all over the world that find this place beautiful and wonderful, and it gives us an opportunity to talk to people that might not already get it. And that is so vital, because you can look at, I mean, the science is relatively unambiguous, but the policy is the hard part. And the policy always comes down to the grassroots and what people believe. And once people start to understand that climate change is the economy, if we don't do something, it's supply chains. And it is like our town is largely dependent on the Alaska fishing fleet, right? That's kind of one of our main drivers of our economy. Well, if Sandlands is, as climate change and habitat changes, if Sandlands go away and salmon go away, not only do the orcas go away, but the part of our economy disappears. And it's that interdependency, that helping people get that and how, see how it impacts our daily lives and our livings, that really hopefully will carry the day.
Yeah, I remember showing a few slides for your presentation, and I could show the doom and gloom even in our state. You've got houses floating down rivers. You've got infernal fires that we've never seen, that kind of, you know, intensity, you know, in any human history. But then there's the opportunity frame. And I guess, you know, there's a little bit of both ways of seeing this on the same kind of coin. You know, one is that we're really screwed if we don't take action, you know, I mean, as a globe. I mean, that's unambiguous too. But I think, you know, there's either a competitive advantage or an opportunity to leverage a whole suite of benefits that are social, environmental, economic, you know, well-being, that make it almost irresistible to march in the direction of climate action. And I think, you know, maybe someone doesn't care about CO2, but they might care about clean air and you know, being able to breathe or have their kids breathe fresh air. They might care about water supply, you know, those kinds of things, or green economy and opportunities for deeper, long-lasting economic development. So I think we could come at it from either angle, because both are true.
And, you know, there is something that's just kind of quirky and wonderful about having the Marine Science Center in Flagship Landing. It's not something that I expected. It's something that I like very much, though, because for all the reasons that you brought up, and Local 2020, the Climate Action Committee, have been at the forefront of so much good policy in the city. I commend both of you. I do have to tell you, John, that we probably have about 3 minutes left. Okay. If there's anything you would like to go to.
Well, I think first and foremost, I really do want to thank Cindy and Janine for their long-standing work and value to our community. It's just awesome to be on a call with you both. And of course, Tim, I always love being with you. And there are a number, I mean, you represent a number of people who have been working on this for a long time. So I want to recognize that, as I recognize the number of people who have yet to really roll up their sleeves, but that are about to. So thanks in advance. I did want to get, just out of the spirit of this conversation, I wanted to get to a couple of questions that were sent to me by email. So I'll just quickly take care of a couple of those. One from Sunny was about building affordable homes as part of large-scale building projects. And, you know, there's a climate angle on this one, of course, too. And I guess there was a specific question about Cook Avenue. And I guess the easiest way to say this is, you know, that ship has sailed because it was, you know, agreed and permitted in 2008. But I think it raises a question, you know, is it possible to put restrictions or requirements for affordable housing on any development? And I could see it both ways. I could see that being a good way of making sure every project has affordable housing. I could also just say, well, affordable housing almost by definition needs to be subsidized somehow. We're trying to do that as a city by using federal and state dollars to put in infrastructure. That's one way of driving down the cost. We're proposing to maybe do that by purchasing land or donating land to drive down the cost. So, you know, the development community might have a different answer to this where they say it's got to pencil out. And so if you put a requirement for something, then it, something has to give somewhere else. So interesting idea. And thank you, Sunny. The other question comes from, I believe her name is Kathy. I'll summarize, Kathy, if you're listening. Basically, you don't like driving through Port Townsend because Squim and Polsbo look nicer, cleaner, and more beautiful. And I just humbly contest that, like I did my email back to you. I disagree. and I think there was some indication that we should be pulling weeds for private businesses and, you know, listed a number of them. I understand the feel of a community matters, but I think, you know, to some degree, that's an all hands on deck exercise. And I think a lot of people like the quirkiness that they see around town. Not to say we can't do better, we will try. There was another part of her question about healthcare. And the city doesn't want to avoid responsibility for that, but it really is a county responsibility and a Jefferson Healthcare responsibility. So I can indicate we work very closely with both the county and Jefferson Healthcare on issues of public health. But that is not a main driver for the city. So anyway, thank you, Kathy, for your question.
And thank you, John, for addressing that. I did read that, and we're all of different minds of how a city should look and how a city should feel. From my perspective, I'm happy. And it's more about the people that are here. That's why I came here. It was more about the people, frankly, than the city. And some of those people are right in front of me on this screen. And I thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. And we'll be back next Thursday.
Thank you. Delightful. Thanks, John. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
See you soon, Cindy. Bye.